Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Monday afternoon, November 4th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The grueling campaign season impacting consumer spending. We'll discuss that in our next segment. But right now, there will be a close watch in financial markets as the outcome of the presidential election becomes near. The week ahead will also feature key economic data and a meeting of the Federal Reserve. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Lance Roberts, Chief Investment Strategist at RIA Advisors in Houston. Lance, thank you for joining us today. And in terms of moving markets, what is a bigger market mover? The results of the presidential election or a interest rate cut that exceeds expectations?
Really, they're both going to be moving the markets. The sell-off we've had over the last couple of days isn't really surprising. Markets typically, what we say, de-risk a bit, right? They take some money off the table. We had a nice rally in September, into October. Markets kind of taking some profits off the table because of uncertainty about who the actual president is going to be come Wednesday morning. And then we also have the Fed rate cut. One of the concerns there is that maybe the Fed doesn't cut rates. We've had decent employment numbers so far. Economic growth came in at 3%. So the big concern for Wall Street is maybe they don't cut enough. So to your point, you know, the Fed meeting on Wednesday is going to be very important. The employment number last Friday was exceptionally weak, but that was due to the hurricanes mostly. So we're kind of looking through that number a bit. But inflation data is next week, and that will be the big driver for the markets in the year end.
And there was a little bit of the consensus about the November interest rate cut swung from no cut to maybe 25%. And now with that jobs number on Friday, another half a point cut is back on the table. But what's the consensus telling us?
Consensus is probably going to be 25 basis points at this juncture. As I said, the employment report was weak, obviously 12,000 jobs. That's not a great number. But again, there was a lot of impact from Hurricane Milton and also from the Boeing strike. We had a lot of workers out temporarily. So I think the Fed's going to look past that report and look to the next report. Now, if the next report comes in very weak, past both hurricanes and the strike, then I think maybe in December, the odds of a 50 basis point cut will be higher. But I think 25 basis points on Wednesday is what we should expect.
And then very quickly on the election front, of course, even if you work for the biggest banks at their decision desk trying to game out what's going to happen, it seems like everybody's analysis kind of lines up with what their heart is thinking about the election. But regardless of the result, what are some of the areas of uncertainty that the result could potentially answer? Because in my mind, regardless of who wins, the expiration of the 2017 tax cut bill coming up next year is going to be one of the first items on the new president's menu.
Absolutely. Remember, too, that, you know, whoever gets elected president, Rob, that's important, but not as important as for the markets anyway, but not as important as to who controls the House and Senate. Because if you have gridlock in the House and Senate, that means a lot of these more progressive policies or more radical policies, however you want to phrase it, don't get passed. They don't come to fruition. So markets really like gridlock going into the end of the year and next year. But to your point, exactly. One of the big issues is going to be tax cuts going into next year and the expiration of those tax cuts. So, you know, if we do see an outcome where those tax cuts look like they will be allowed to expire, we may see that start to impact financial markets. And again, we've had a great year this year. Markets are up 20%-ish for the year. I would expect more single-digit returns next year with, you know, policies from either candidate, whoever gets elected. The policies are not going to be as conducive for economic and market growth next year as they were this year.
Lance Roberts, Chief Investment Strategist, RIA Advisors in Houston. Find him online at realinvestmentadvice.com or Twitter/X at Lance Roberts.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It appears election anxiety is causing some people to keep their wallets closed. Let's check in with Bob Phibbs, CEO of The Retail Doctor based in New York, the website theretaildoc.com. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And this is a really a remarkable statistics or a remarkable trend, Bob, because I have been covering elections as a professional since the year 2000. And even though every election year seems to be intense with partisanship, people really, you know, into their feelings about which candidate they would like to see win, I've never seen that really impact someone's target run, but that's apparently showing up.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think we've ever had an election where people are threatening violence and all sorts of things come election day, which, frankly, consumers are not much different than Wall Street. We want stability. So, you know, what got a little attention today was an online poll, about 1,500 people, who 44% said that they are spending less until after Election Day. And on the one side, I can kind of understand that, of course. But I'm in Manhattan today, and from the amount of shopping bags I'm seeing on the streets, that hasn't quite played out, but I get it. It's a scary time, right? It is.
Well, I guess if you want to be to be kind of sarcastic about it, maybe those are Democrats and they saw the results of that Iowa poll over the weekend and they feel good about Kamala Harris, so they went to the store today. But it just seems very strange that the election anxiety would filter all the way down to your end of the year spending plans, because people are already figuring out what they're doing for Christmas, what they're doing for New Year's, what their winter break vacations are going to be. And it seems like the presidential election is not really impacting how they live their life.
No, and I think what we're talking about here, though, is public safety. That's what I think we're running into, is things, you know, someone's trying to make a big show, or they're trying to do something tomorrow or the next day. I might want to be out in this. That makes people anxious. And so they just say, I can wait a week or whatever till I make that big purchase. But I think it's important, Rob, we understand that the consumer confidence has been highest it's been since, I think it's March of 2021. And in fact, it was a record high in October. So I think this is more of a, if it is for some people, I think it's more of a temporary thing. And again, markets and retailers like stability along with our consumers.
Well, and in a more direct way, as far as consumer confidence and consumers' ability to shop, the way that is being impacted by the election is in Washington, D.C., where the security presence has been ramped up considerably, and there are shops near the Capitol that are boarding up their windows. So even though we're being kind of snarky about this in the nation's capital, this is the reality.
Well, I think it is a reality. I don't mean to be snarky as much as, quite simply, there are people threatening violence. And that is scary for people who have to go to work and traffic and a lot of other things. Is my job going to be impacted by this? Is public transit? I mean, we are living in a fear-stoked world. Anyone who doesn't say they're feeling anxious about 25 things at any time right now, I think, is living in la-la land. It's just we all put on a face like, hey, I'm fine. And it used to be, Rob, that we would shop when we were stressed out. And now it seems like maybe today we're not.
Well, let's go back into the Wayback Machine, Bob, and go back to the year 2000, that first election that I covered as a professional. That was the Al Gore, George W. Bush race, where everything came down to, as the late Tim Russert said, Florida, Florida, Florida. There was a recount that lasted a month. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. We did not know the outcome of the election until mid-December. And was there a hangover effect on consumer spending during that time?
Absolutely, on the holidays, I think you're right. Although, also, you look at after 9/11, nation was shocked. What the heck's going to happen? It took everybody to kind of reset true north. And I think whatever happens tomorrow, hopefully, particularly in Pennsylvania, some of the swing states where I guess like every ad, every mail piece you get is one side or the other, maybe we can ramp down the fear, because everything we're hearing out of National Retail Federation and others is it is still expected to be a 3-4% increase in retail sales. And that's harder because this year we're going up against increases that were last year came from inflationary pressures. So right now everyone looks to be a happy holiday.
Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Find him online, theretaildoc.com. Coming up next, we meet the co-founder and CEO of a fast casual Mexican food chain that's expanding in the Chicago area.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's an extremely competitive battle for the fast casual food dollar, especially in the area of Mexican food. We're joined by one of the combatants with a very interesting backstory. Say hello to Stephen Marks, co-founder and CEO of Guzman y Gomez, four locations across the Chicagoland area, two more in the coming months coming to the Chicago area. And Stephen, this is a fascinating story. It just goes to show you how food really is a universal language, because you were from New York. You relocated to Sydney, Australia, and that's where you're talking to us today, and decided that Australia's Mexican food market was extremely lacking, so you decided to do something about it yourself.
That's right. Hey, Rob, how are you? I'm actually in Chicago. Actually in our store in Schaumburg. So I spent a lot of time now in Chicago. We got a big team back home, but you're right. So I'm from New York, and people are like, oh, and you're a New Yorker selling Mexican food in Australia. I'm like, exactly. So well, what happens when I moved there, when I moved to Australia over 20 years ago, I couldn't find any good Mexican food. So I actually brought chefs in from Mexico, had a lady making tortillas. We were the first one doing pork shoulders and briskets. And it's been a 20-year journey, and it's one of the fastest-growing fast food brands in the world now, which is exciting.
Well, Stephen, thank you for clarifying that you're in Schaumburg, because I was trying to do the time change math in my head, and it's like, oh, it's 12:22 for you as well. So I'm glad you're here, and I hope you enjoy our great northwest suburbs. But when it comes to you have a Mexican chain. It starts in Sydney, Australia, and how do the Aussies react to that?
They loved it. Well, it took a while to educate them. They thought black beans were olives, so that obviously took a little bit of explaining and trial. But, you know, like anything, we're obsessed with food at GYG, and that's really what separates us from so many other brands and our people. So it was just trial, right? They didn't know what a chipotle pepper was, right? They didn't know, you know, what a quesadilla was. So it just took years and years of making sure that we delivered excellent, high-quality food to the guests. And now it's, you know, I mean, you look at any kid in Australia, everybody loves GYG. That's what they call it.
So you have Australia, Japan, Singapore. And then when you brought it back to the U.S., was there some concern on your part that would GYG stand head and shoulders along with the other fast casual Mexican chains that existed in the States?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny. Australia obviously has a smaller population than the U.S. So to really kill it in food, you have to create a brand that people have fallen in love with. And we have a lot of drive-thrus. And for me, you know, we do breakfast, lunch, dinner. Australia, we have restaurants open up 24/7. There was nothing like it. And people always say, oh, but there's so much Mexican food in the U.S. There's so much mediocre Mexican food. And I think when you take so much pride and you're obsessed with food quality and your team, when people walk into a GYG here, and obviously we got four restaurants in Chicago. We have Naperville, Schaumburg, Crystal Lake, Buffalo Grove, Deerfield's about to open, Evanston's about to open, that they walk in, they're like, wow, this is better than Chipotle. And that's the whole thing, is to get people to try it, because it's so much better than what's on offer here. And that's why we started to roll stores out here in Chicago, which, even though I'm a New Yorker, I love Chicago. And that's why we picked the Chicagoland.
Stephen Marks, co-founder and CEO of Guzman y Gomez, GYG, a store that began in Sydney, Australia, now taken over the world, four locations in the Chicagoland area, two more opening in the coming months. Thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. It's a busy final day of campaigning for the presidential hopefuls ahead of tomorrow's vote. The combination of politics and work can be a toxic mix. A music legend whose roots are here in Chicago has died, and at Stock Picker Monday, we'll get a pair of suggestions from an investing pro. WBBM Business. The markets are lower. The Dow is down 215 points. The NASDAQ down 8, the S&P 500 down 8. 68 degrees right now in Chicago under cloudy skies, going up to 71. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Tomorrow is Election Day, with the race for the White House viewed as extremely tight. This is CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett taking a look at the battleground states.
19 electoral votes, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Democrats have an advantage thus far. It's worth noting that the early vote is smaller in Pennsylvania as compared to North Carolina, Arizona, other places. But since I mentioned North Carolina, let's go there. You see very equal distribution, Democrat and Republican. This is also something to watch on election night. Unaffiliated voters, meaning independents, they could go either way. They could break late. If they do in one direction or another, Trump or Harris, that could be indicative. Let's finish up in Arizona. Come election night, that's going to be late in the evening, early Wednesday morning. Sizable advantage, at least in Republican participation in early voting in Arizona. Again, keep your eye on those unaffiliated third-party voters.
Vice President Harris is wrapping up in Pennsylvania. Former President Trump also campaigning in Pennsylvania, as well as North Carolina and Michigan. WBBM is your best source for the latest on the election. Join us tomorrow night as our full team of reporters, along with CBS News, bring you up-to-the-minute results and analysis on local and national races. Our Election Central coverage begins at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. Quincy Jones has died. He was 91. The Chicago-born music legend may be best known as the award-winning producer for Michael Jackson and the driving force behind the We Are the World charity project, but he also did many other things.
His body of work includes arranging this classic for Frank Sinatra.
Fly me to the moon, let me play.
Producing rock and roll for Leslie Gore.
It's my party and I'm crying.
Music for the big and small screen like Ironside, Sanford and Son, and this featured in Austin Powers decades after Jones recorded it. Quincy Jones was a jazz man at heart, assembling all-star bands for albums like Walking in Space, Peter King, CBS News.
It's 12:33 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist with Murphy & Sylvestre in Chicago. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And what is driving today's sell-off activity? Is it a lot of hedging ahead of tomorrow's election results?
No, I'm not so sure if it's really about the election. I mean, it's been something that's been on everybody's radar now for quite some time. And I think they're watching and keeping an eye on how the polling is going. And that's moving the markets a little bit. But we also have something later in the week. The Fed meets and will decide interest rates. And I think that is also holding the markets kind of steady here. I mean, the S&P is down less than a tenth of 1%. So I think we'll see some more movement later in the week. We expect to see a fair amount of volatility once we get through the election, and providing we get election results sooner rather than later. So hopefully by Friday, that will be settled and we'll have the Fed meeting behind us. And then we can start looking at earnings and the economy and what the new president, their cabinet may look like and their policies that they're actually going to try to implement.
Oh, Paul, thinking back to election day and week 4 years ago, because the 2020 election was not called definitively until Saturday, but there was something, one intervening event that happened after the end of voting, and that was the COVID vaccine. The first COVID vaccine was given its blessing by the FDA, and I think the markets, the Dow rallied 1,000 points that day. So we really can't compare market activity election day or week of 2024 to 2020, because there was an extraordinary event in a week that was full of them.
Oh, absolutely. And even if you go back to prior to that, when Trump and Hillary Clinton were running, overnight when Trump was declared victor, the markets were down 5 percentage points. And then by the close of business the next day, it was up 2 percentage points. So, you know, it's very difficult to try to handicap around an election. And we really don't recommend clients going to cash or pushing all their chips into the middle of the table. Kind of stay right where you're at, allow the dust to settle, and just wait and see before you make some decisions longer term. Because ultimately, the markets really go on overall economic growth and corporate earnings.
Yeah, if you want to get over or get past any election day anxiety you may have, regardless of the results, whatever happens, happens, Paul, and you'll make money one way or the other.
No, it's true. And like I said, again, we're looking at a very long term. Many of our portfolios and clients' investment horizon is well beyond 4 years. So you're going to see multiple presidents in your lifetime. And these types of events, you know, they're interesting, a lot of conversation, both sides. But from an investment perspective, it's best to keep the politics out of the portfolio.
Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy & Silvest in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, making sure you don't let politics put your job in jeopardy.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It can be a very difficult navigation when the topic of politics comes up at the job. Let's talk about staying out of the line of fire with Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And looking back throughout your entire career, Rick, was there a particular election or moment in time where politics definitely became more front and center for people and something for managers to have to navigate?
Well, I don't know that they did a very good job navigating. It was certainly back in the 60s, and I'm old enough to have been part of some of that. You know, the Summer of Love through the 70s, there were a lot of people on both sides of the equation that didn't see eye to eye. And I don't think companies at the time really got invested in that at all. It was something that happened outside of work, but it tore the country apart in many ways in those early days of the Vietnam War.
But now we're in a situation where you add social media into the equation and there is an incentive structure if you choose to pursue it, either on Facebook or Twitter, X, Instagram, TikTok, where you receive validation for certain types of performative behavior. And that also could include acting out and advocating for people and causes in the office. And you as the manager have to deal with that. So what are some good rules of the road as we go into tomorrow?
Well, I think what's important for the companies to understand and for the people that are experiencing it is the election itself is just the beginning of dealing with the stress from those who are on the wrong side of how it comes out. And so the companies have to identify that you're all employees. We care about all of you. You have the right to vote. We're all citizens. We live in a free country. You're allowed to do that. But we have to treat each other civilly, and we have to make sure that people have space to feel comfortable with how they're feeling. And that's the issue. The politics and the election and the world is so big and so complex. To boil it down to, you know, climate change or COVID or any of those other things being responsible or can be repaired by one person isn't even practical. So we have to ratchet it down. And to your point, you can't even, you know, you can't, it's not getting immersed in social media. Try to stay out of it. It's almost impossible. It's ubiquitous. It's within everything that we look at every day.
Now, some stories that we're hearing is that some offices are going to work from home mode tomorrow, more or less because maybe employees just simply will have their mind on the election. Or there's also it's a benefit where you can take election day off, get paid time off so you can cast a ballot. So there are some businesses that are trying to accommodate people's feelings about an election, this one or the one in 2020 or one coming up in 2028.
No, well, there's some irony in the fact that we have President's Day as a vacation, but we don't get off time to vote. And I think companies that want to embrace that, regardless of people's affiliations, say this is your not just your right, but your responsibility as a citizen to vote, which is the way I look at it. Doesn't matter who you vote for, you should go vote. And companies should do more to allow that to happen. And at the same time, minimize or reduce the exposure to risks and strife and, you know, contention in the office. That's the part that's going to have to be managed more carefully.
Hey, well, I mentioned this in an earlier segment, but it seems like a turning point in my observation was the year 2000. That was when we had the Al Gore, George Bush race go into overtime. There was a month of counting in Florida that was eventually ended by the Supreme Court. And because the entire country was sitting on the edge of its seat until mid-December, I mean, this was early November to December 12th of 2000, that was all people could talk about. And what was it like from an HR perspective?
Uncertainty creates a natural reaction in the human brain. It affects the amygdala and it becomes a fight or flight situation. When you don't know what's going to happen, whether your company's going to be okay or not, whether the election is going to go one way or the other, those uncertainties are incredible stressors for people. And we've had a lot of those over the last 7 or 8 years. So companies have to be sensitive to just the higher levels of anxiety in the average person and do the best they can to bleed that out and mitigate it and avoid getting into situations where there's just conflict directly. It needs to be shut down, and people need to have an avenue to vent or leave. Working from home, taking time off. If you're stressed out, this is a time to say, I'm not coming in. This is where I'm going to take my PTO. I have unlimited PTO. I'm going to take a couple of days to make sure that I don't come in on tilt when I show up at work.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday. Joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And we just wrapped up a segment on election anxiety and the workplace, and one of your stock selections is one way you could address that election anxiety as we approach the beginning of vote counting tomorrow night.
Yeah, good segue there, Rob, and thanks for having me on. So the first pick is MSOS. This sector has been under pressure as Trump has appeared to have the lead now in the election. Whether he wins or not, we'll see, but this sector has been under pressure, and we believe that regardless of who wins, neither candidate is going to hurt the sector. And so it's poised for a win regardless of, again, what happens tomorrow. So we think it's got a 10 to 20% upside with very little risk of a downside move just because it's already been under pressure. And so regardless of what happens tomorrow, and these are the picks that we're going with today, is things that we think will work no matter who wins. So MSOS, I think, has got a 10 or 20% upside whether Trump or Kamala win tomorrow.
And I don't want to crowd out your next selection, but state legislative seats will change hands tomorrow. So as you point out, regardless of what happens in Washington, there are some states that have not taken action on recreational marijuana, but could do so if the makeup of those legislative chambers changes.
Yeah, and it could change, but, you know, the trend is your friend, and it's an overwhelming trend towards legalization, and we don't think this election is going to stop that regardless of who wins on any of the ballots, and they're saying maybe the House goes for the Democrats, the Senate breaks for the Republicans, but, yeah, as you said, state houses and senates are another area, and states overall are poised to continue this trend towards legalization. So we love this pick. It's just, I think it's going to win regardless of what happens tomorrow.
And then very quickly, your next one is in the Treasury market.
Yeah, TLT. So again, another asset class has been under pressure in the last few weeks and actually a few months. And again, it's the long bond has been under pressure. Rates have been rising, but we think that regardless of who wins tomorrow, it's poised for a 3 to 5% rally. And it's just because there's been a little bit too much anxiety about inflation, in our opinion. So whether Trump wins, and I think if Trump wins, it'll especially rally more. But even if Harris wins, it's just been too much under pressure. You're going to see 10-year yields falling back towards 4%. That will cause the TLT to rally. So look for a 3 to 5% rally in the TLT, regardless, again, who wins tomorrow.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital in Chicago. His selections, the Advisor Shares Pure U.S. Cannabis ETF, MSOS, and iShares 20-Year Treasury Bond ETF, TLT.